Good afternoon and welcome to Shoe Radio. My name is John Whiffin.
And I'm Will Pye. We're coming to you live at 1:45 on Thursday the 2nd of May, but you'll also be able to listen back to us as a podcast that will be uploaded soon after we go off air.
Coming up on Shoe Radio Sport this afternoon, Champions League action from last night. We're talking about a day of shocks at the World Snooker Championship and a crucial night in the WSL title race. Our music this afternoon is local band Bear Park, so it's a packed show that we've got ahead.
First, though, the news headlines on this Thursday lunchtime with Joe Burton.
Thank you, Will. The time is 2:15 and here are your news headlines. A pupil has escaped visible injury in an attack at a school in Sheffield. Two adults were slightly hurt in an incident involving broken glass yesterday morning. A 17-year-old boy has been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder, and South Yorkshire Police Assistant Chief Constable Dan Thorpe has given more details.
The two adults both suffered minor injuries, one from a sharp object which is believed to be broken glass. The child was assaulted and thankfully has no visible injuries. But I know this will have been a frightening ordeal for everyone involved.
A man has appeared in court charged with the murder of 14-year-old Daniel Anjorin in northeast London on Tuesday. 36-year-old Marcus Arduni Monzo remains in custody over the alleged attack in Hainault. Two police officers were also seriously injured. Students at Sheffield University are occupying parts of the campus in protest over Israel's war in Gaza. They are also protesting over the university's links with arms manufacturers. It comes after police in Los Angeles moved in overnight on pro-Palestinian protesters after a violent standoff at a university in California. A United Nations expert says that the shooting of a Palestinian boy in the occupied West Bank by Israeli soldiers appears to be a war crime. 15-year-old Basil and 8-year-old Adam were shot by Israeli soldiers last November. Legal experts have described the force as indiscriminate. John Swinney has confirmed that he is standing to be the new leader of the SNP. It comes after Hamza Yousaf stepped down following a power-sharing disagreement with the Greens on Monday. Swinney previously led the party between 2000 and 2004.
That I intend to stand for election as leader of the Scottish National Party. One of the benefits of stepping back from frontline politics a year ago is that I've had the time and the opportunity to see our political situation from a different perspective than before.
People in South Yorkshire are going to the polls today. Local elections are taking place across the UK, where, as well as local council seats, 1.4 million people are also able to vote for the next South Yorkshire mayor. Transport is one of the key manifesto pledges in our region. The new Co-op Live Arena in Manchester has been forced to delay its opening for a third time. The arena was set to host Olivia Rodrigo's concerts as part of her Guts World Tour. Fans have been speaking of their frustrations with the last-minute changes.
We were in the line, got the notice that it was cancelled. But it shouldn't have gone ahead anyway because the whole week has been cancelled, so it's just a bit of a joke.
And the latest Doctor Who star is to be turned into a waxwork. Shuti Gatwa's likeness will go on display from July at Madame Tussauds, following the last episode of his first series. The 31-year-old actor says that he can't wait to see the final result.
First this afternoon, we're going to get an update from the Crucible, where we're at the quarter-final stages of the World Championship.
Yes, we are, and we're at the time where the big boys start knocking each other out. Last night, we saw Stuart Bingham beat Ronnie O'Sullivan in a really tense match. In the final session, we saw it go from 6-all to 10 frames apiece, but it was Bingham who turned it on when the pressure really mounted to take the match 13 frames to 10.
Seven-time champion O'Sullivan said afterwards that he was happy with his progress in recent years, despite the loss.
Yeah, it's just the way it goes, you know. I'm actually really happy, to be honest with you. I feel like I'm actually getting through the ball, which is more important for me at this stage, you know. Been a bit worrying a couple of years. So for me, you know, not the win that I'd like to have had, but, you know, that's just snooker. That's the way it goes.
Bingham put on one of his best performances in recent memory in the quarterfinal, and the 2015 champion says that his emotions got the better of him after the win.
Yep, I've had a little cry at the back there. But yeah, unbelievable. As you can hear in the voice. I was just enjoying it out there.
Elsewhere, there were other shocks, with world number two Judd Trump falling to a 13-9 defeat to Jack Jones.
And on the other side of the draw, Kyron Wilson will face David Gilbert in the last four, after they knocked out four-time champion John Higgins and Stephen Maguire, respectively.
I guess we'll see what sort of shocks today has on offer from the World Championships, and of course, we'll update you tomorrow.
Now it's crunch time at the Crucible, and crunch time in the Champions League as well, where we've had the first leg of the semi-finals now, both of them.
Yes, so yesterday we covered the match between Bayern Munich and Real Madrid, and then last night we saw the other tie between Borussia Dortmund and Paris Saint-Germain.
Dortmund ran out 1-0 winners on the night in front of a raucous Westfalenstadion crowd, thanks to Niklas Füllkrug first half strike. With a slender lead heading for Paris in the second leg, head coach Edin Terzic isn't getting ahead of himself.
Yeah, I think that we deserved to win. I think it was a period where we've been a bit lucky, but we created good opportunities, we showed some good stuff, and now we're taking a small, tiny advantage into the second leg, nothing less, nothing more, but I think it was a very, very good performance from our side.
Terzic firmly has his feet still on the ground then, but how important was it for Dortmund to lead after the first leg, John?
I think it was massive for them. They came out the traps really well. As we said yesterday, that they needed to do that and needed to take the game to PSG. And they did that, didn't they? They came out and they dominated the first half, and they could really have been going into halftime more goals ahead, couldn't they?
Well, yeah, despite away goals not being a thing, you still want to make home advantage count, don't you? And with the yellow wall behind them, you'd hope that they'd take at least a 1-0. You were thinking more than a 1-0, to be fair. Niklas Füllkrug had a couple chances, so did Brandt. But on the other end of the... other end on the side, PSG had some as well, didn't they?
Yeah, no, I honestly have no idea how PSG didn't score last night. Don't get me wrong, they were the worst side, but they'll be so disappointed that they didn't manage to get even one or two goals. I think, was it twice in 3 seconds they hit the inside of the post?
Yeah, it was Mbappe hit the inside of the post where he cut in, and then it went straight back to Hakimi, who hit the inside of the post. So they really should have scored there. That would have made the tie a whole another talking point. I mean, the talking point after this tie right now is Sancho and his amazing revival in that game.
Yes, I am a Man United fan, for those of you listeners who don't know, and I haven't seen much good from Jadon Sancho in the 2 years since he signed for United. But suddenly, he goes back to Dortmund, and he was absolutely outstanding last night. He was the best player on the pitch by a country mile.
Oh, 100%. I think it was 12 successful dribbles in that game. I mean, Thierry Henry said a stat before that in all of his games at Manchester United, every game, the maximum amount of dribbles, successful dribbles he'd complete is 7 times. So 12 in one game against PSG in the semi-finals of the Champions League. He didn't let the occasion get to him, and he looks like he's really enjoying his football.
It's great to see. Whatever you believe about why his time at United didn't work out, it's brilliant to see a young man go back to somewhere that he clearly feels comfortable, somewhere he's clearly loved, and get back to playing his best football.
It's interesting, though, because he didn't actually win Man of the Match last night for Dortmund. It was actually the Rolls-Royce centre-back, Mats Hummels. What did you make of his performance?
Oh, he's rolling back the years. La Remontada. It's great to see it. It's fantastic to see the Hummels, because there was probably pushing 10 years ago now that he was one of the best centre-backs in the world. And then he struggled when the time that he left Bayern, and then he came back to Dortmund, and he didn't really tear up trees for his first year back. But then now, he was absolutely sensational last night. And I don't want to say he pocketed Mbappe, because Mbappe still should have scored. But he made the best player in the world look much less than that, didn't he?
Well, I think it was their tactics going into like marking Mbappe and stuff, and him through the middle, I think. But Hummels, his passing as well out from the back, I thought was amazing. Left foot, right foot. He was very confident in his passing out from the back. So were Dortmund, actually. There was a couple times they could have been caught out there, but he was confident passing out from the back. He was confident one-on-one with Mbappe. Do you remember that tackle for Germany he performed on Mbappe? I think it was at the World Cup where he was coming from behind.
Yeah, it was in last Euros.
Yeah.
When Mbappe's running through on goal, and you're thinking Mbappe against an old man at that point.
Yeah.
Because that's what he was. I mean, he's even older now. And yet, somehow, he just made it.
But thing is about Hummels, we know him. He always wants to improve. And despite such a good performance from him, he still thinks that they could have done better.
It was intense, but it was a lot of fun to play in the stadium with these fans behind us. I think everybody in the team gave it all today, 100%, and it really worked well together as a group. We didn't play perfect, so it's good to see that we don't play perfect, but still get a good result against such a good team. Now we're here at this stage. We won the first game. It's 90 minutes to the final. We know we want to get there. We know what we want. I think you saw us all putting all our hearts on the pitch today to achieve this.
Now, it was Niklas Füllkrug with the first goal for Dortmund and the only goal of the tie. It was a very well-taken goal, wasn't it, John?
Yeah, it was a fantastic finish. Did it remind you of Haaland's goal against PSG a couple of years ago? Do you remember the one that made the amazing noise when it hit the net?
Yeah. Well, that was a long-range effort, wasn't it? Left-footed. But this one, Fulkrug was running in behind the PSG defence. They carried such a high line. I think Hummels mentioned it in his interview later on in that interview. He talked about them having a high line and them trying long balls over the top. Adeyemi had a couple times where he went past that line. Fulkrug, this one time, ball over the top. That touch to set himself, amazing, and that left-footed shot.
Yeah, no, PSG's high line is something they're going to have to look at for the next leg. I mean, Fulkrug, he could have had more chances. We also need to talk about Julian Brandt, who had an amazing chance, which was, well, Jadon Sancho did brilliantly to slide him through, and then it was an incredible tackle from Marquinhos. One of those that I'm a defender, and that I would talk about that for the rest of my life if I managed to pull that off.
That's a defender's goal, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. And you saw it the way he celebrated when he jumped up. Yeah. But no, it was absolutely fantastic play from Marquinhos, but PSG really do need to look at that for the next leg. However, the positives for PSG is that they are only one goal behind, and in the next leg they'll be in front of their home fans, and they need to take advantage of it as much as Dortmund did.
Yeah, I mean, when you come to Dortmund, the yellow wall really behind that team, it's hard to come to such a hostile environment and get any points from it, or get a draw, get a win from it. And I think the fact that Dortmund have taken a slender, very slender lead, as Edin Terzic said, to Paris, PSG will still fancy themselves despite being down in the first leg?
You'd have to say so. You'd have to think that when PSG are at home, they would back themselves to score two goals at home against a team of Dortmund's quality. Because Dortmund aren't the best team in the Europe, don't get me wrong. They could still make the final, they could still win it. But you'd have to say that Mbappe and co and all the other guys like Warren Zaire-Emery, these guys are going to be confident that they can score enough goals. It's just whether PSG can keep enough out at the other end, isn't it?
Yeah, on the flip side, PSG have a habit of letting goals in, and I don't think they really have had a goalless game for a good long while.
No, definitely. There is just one more point we need to make on this before we do leave the Champions League there, and that's the coefficient. Now, we've been talking about this all year, and unfortunately, given the fact that Germany, or the German league, the Bundesliga, has done better than the Premier League in Europe this season, that means that next season they are going to have an extra Champions League place, doesn't it, mate?
Yeah, they're going to have fifth place, which actually, funnily enough, might go to Dortmund, which is good for them getting into the final, hopefully, and coming fifth place. But it's not good for the Premier League and the likes of Tottenham or Aston Villa, who are both fighting it out for fourth place. Whoever gets fifth place, they won't have Champions League to look forward to, which is a lot of money which would bring in to that club.
Yeah, so it was looking like for a while that England or the English League would get an extra fifth place based on the fact of Manchester City and Arsenal and Villa and all these teams in Europe possibly doing well. Turns out that Villa are the only one left now, so unfortunately next season that means that England will not have an extra Champions League place.
Now, we mentioned Jadon Sancho earlier. He is returning to Manchester United in the summer. Unlucky for Borussia Dortmund fans.
And probably him.
Yeah, and probably him. Now, there's been a story released recently about Man U actually putting every single player up for sale, John.
Yes, so the story is that every single player in the Manchester United squad, apart from Rasmus Højlund, Garnacho, and also the young player Kobbie Mainoo, that every other player is supposedly up for sale. Now, they've all got very long contracts and they're all on a lot of money, so it's not necessarily set that they're all going to get sold, but that's supposedly the story, that the new owners have come in and they want to make everybody available for sale so they can make their own squad, isn't it?
They want to rejuvenate the squad. Yeah, the contracts apparently has an average of about 150 grand a week, which is mental, including like the likes of Garnacho and Mainoo, who have just come through. It's mental. Now, the BBC conducted a study with Transfermarkt, and they looked at the value of each player in this squad. I mean, the ones that jump out to you, Rashford is over 100 mil, which is a bit mental. Højlund, obviously, they don't want to sell. That's 93 mil. That's around what they... How much did they buy him for, John?
It was about 71 in the end, but with some add-ons and stuff. So it's not necessarily that he won't get to that, but he may well go up to that price, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, one that stands out for me really is Antony, gone down to £63 million.
I'm surprised he's not less than that, to be honest.
Yeah.
The thing you have to take into account with websites like Transfermarkt is that they take into account things like contract length and wage as well. So obviously, I can't think of any team in the world that would want to spend £63 million on Antony right now, But because he has got such a long contract and because he is on a lot of money, that is taken into account.
I mean, we're looking at the list now. Would you say any of those prices are accurate?
I think some of them are, to be fair to them. I think some of them are a bit low with, for example, Kobbie Mainoo. Like, there's no way United would sell him for $45 million right now. But then you've got some of them that are a bit high as well, like Scott McTominay. $46 million for him? Can you imagine anyone wanting to pay that?
Well, we were talking about him being like a perfect fit for West Ham, weren't we? And you were saying, oh, he would fit their system perfectly. They would pay that money for him. I mean, they'd want him ahead of Calvin Phillips, for example.
Well, yeah. I think anyone would want him ahead of Calvin Phillips right now. The Yorkshire Pirlo is not ripping up trees right now, is he, mate?
No, he's not. I mean, another that stands out to me, Casemiro, they bought him for quite a lot more than that. He's now down to 24 mil. Martial, isn't he meant to leave at the end of the season on a free?
Yeah.
He's valued at 11 mil. I don't think he's going to stay at that. Varane as well, valued at 11 mil.
Yeah, I think it's just important that from a Manchester United point of view, they just need to get these guys off massive contracts. That what happens is they put them on massive contracts when they sign them, and then it's all great. And then 2 years down the line, like it is with Casemiro, now there's a guy on 350 grand a week for another 3 years, that it's not looking like they're going to be able to shift. Like, they must be thanking everything in the world that Saudi Arabia look like they want to sign all these players for a lot of money, because if they wasn't, they'd just have to sit him on the bench for 3 years, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I imagine they're courting quite a lot of clubs in Saudi Arabia. So Arsenal, I think Edu's gone there to court about Gabriel Jesus. But we must mention that Varane, he's 11 mil because his contract also runs out in the summer. I don't know if they're going to renew it.
No, it's not looking likely at the minute. Well, certainly not on the same terms, which is smart because he's not fit enough, often enough, to be worth that money. When he plays and when he's on form, he's great. But there's so many guys in this squad that just can't get fitness. Like Mason Mount. This is a £50 million signing last summer. And how much have we seen him?
Well, he's now valued at half of that. I've just seen 25 million. He's valued at half of what they bought him for a year ago. You saw in the story, I think, that to bring in this team around Erik ten Hag in the last few years, they've spent around £1 billion. Now it's valued at just over 800-ish. So they're making a loss on these players. They're not gaining. Even with these young players coming in, they're not gaining at all.
Well, you have to say a lot of those were there before Erik ten Hag, to be fair. Although he hasn't spent well, if we're honest. But it's one of these things that, yes, they've lost so much money, but they need to go and spend again, don't they? Think how many players will it take to make that 11 Premier League challenging worthy?
One,
six,
one,
seven, eight?
Yeah, at least,
yeah.
I think. Genuinely, there's two or three who will help out that squad Champions League, or
Challenge for the Champions League,
Yeah. But one name, I've just looked at it and it's just caught my eye, Wan-Bissaka. He's caught my eye. £10 million valued, but I think he's been very underrated this year.
He's one of those players who, because he's not in a very good team, and because he's not a sexy player, is he? He's not someone that gets you out of the seat, that excites you.
Yeah.
But he's effective at what he does. And maybe I'm biased as a United fan. If I was, as an England fan as well, if Kyle Walker wasn't playing for England, I would rather him play against Mbappe in the probable Euros quarterfinal than anyone else.
And actually, with the likes of Shaw and Malacia out, he's played a lot of this season and he's not actually performed badly. Another name is Bruno Fernandes. He's valued at $60 million, John.
He's a difficult one because I don't know whether you saw the reports coming out the other day that he's going to consider his future after the Euros, which is shocking because he's the captain. But I don't blame him right now because I think he's the one player at United who's been consistently world-class for the last 4 years. And he's the one who gets most of the abuse and gets most of the flack. He's the one that actually cares. The amount of times he's played through injury. Do you remember that Liverpool game in the FA Cup? When he played almost half an hour, basically on one leg, against Liverpool.
Yeah.
he did so well and he actually cares. Don't get me wrong, he's got his faults. But he's one of these guys that at United, can you see him being there in 5 years' time? I'm not sure I can.
I don't know how old he will be in 5 years' time. His statement was that his full focus is on the FA Cup final and on the Euros with Portugal, but after that he will look at his future. I think a lot of these Manchester United players will be looking at their future, and that is what Jim Ratcliffe wants to do with this club. I don't know about FFP. I don't know how much they'll be able to spend, how much they're going to get for these players, but we will find out in the summer.
Now, though, it's time for your latest news headlines with Joe Burton.
Thank you, John. The time is 2:15, and here are your news headlines. a pupil has escaped visible injury in an attack at a school in Sheffield. Two adults were slightly hurt in an incident involving broken glass yesterday morning. A 17-year-old boy has been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder. A man has appeared in court charged with the murder of 14-year-old Daniel Anjorin in northeast London on Tuesday. 36-year-old Marcus Arduni Monzo remains in custody over the alleged attack in Hainault. Two police officers were also seriously injured. In the last hour, a 43-year-old man has been arrested after a linesman was punched during a non-league football match in Wales. A man has been bailed after the incident during Penryn Diedrich's 8-0 win over Amlwch in Wales on Saturday. Students at Sheffield University are occupying parts of the campus in protest over Israel's war in Gaza. They are also protesting over the university's links with arms manufacturers. It comes after police in Los Angeles moved in overnight on pro-Palestinian protesters after a violent standoff at a university in California. And people in South Yorkshire are going to the polls today as local elections are taking place across the UK. As well as local council seats, 1.4 million people are also able to vote for the next South Yorkshire mayor. Transport is one of the key manifesto pledges in our region.
Joe is just shaking his fist there because he's pronounced the Welsh town name. Right, say it again for us.
No. I think it's Penryn Diedrich.
Penryn Diedrich.
I think.
That was sensational. You should be so proud of yourself.
It might be wrong. But
let's just assume it's right. He put a lot of passion into it. So let's just give it.
It sounded, to my trained ear, it sounded Welsh.
Well, that's good. That's good enough.
It sounded like a very good attempt. So yeah. We'll give him that.
To domestic women's football now. Last night saw a thrilling 4-3 victory for Liverpool over Chelsea, leaving the Blues clinging on in the title race behind leaders Manchester City.
Yes, it was one of the most topsy-turvy games of football I've watched in a long time. When Katerina Macario scored with 8 minutes left to make it 3-3, it looked like Chelsea might nick it. But in the end, it was the Reds that came out on top with a 92nd minute winner.
Emma Hayes said afterwards that it was the manner of the goals conceded that disappointed her most.
You can't concede three set-piece goals, four goals in a half and expect to win a game of football, and that's why we're on the losing end today. But I'm going to be kind to my players and everything they've done. I don't want them to be too harsh on themselves.
A little earlier on, I spoke to Emily Herbert, freelance women's football journalist, and I started by asking her how important this game may prove to be in the title race.
What a game, a 4-3 loss to Liverpool, as I said, and you know, Chelsea's first game in hand, and they really, really needed to win that to close the gap at the top of the table. I think City are 6 points clear now. Chelsea still have that one game to go in hand, but you know, still the City will still be 3 points clear if they win that with two games to go. So yeah, mathematically City only need a win and a draw now to win the league, so it's out of them's hands really.
Why do you think that Chelsea are so tired this season? Like, usually most seasons they go very deep in all of the competitions. What's the difference this season?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, well, accumulation of games will definitely be a part of that. And I know, as you say, they seem to do it every year, but maybe doing that every year has an impact as well, a knock-on effect. But I think part of the tiredness is probably psychological as well. They've been, you know, the talk of the town every week this WSL season. So that probably plays a part. And also the fact that, you know, Emma Hayes announced that she was leaving halfway through the season. Now, I was talking about this morning, and I think it probably has a negative effect on the players. You know, the inconsistency of you know, what to expect, that probably doesn't play well on the pitch, and you know, just that extra pressure of you know, doing your manager proud. And you know, at the end of the interview, when they ask a question of, you know, did you do your manager proud, you don't need that extra pressure on top of, you know, trying to win titles. So I think psychologically, or yeah, I think that plays a big role in it as well.
You mentioned there that City are obviously 6 points ahead of Chelsea now, with they've got two games left, Chelsea have got three. Can you see City slipping up from here? Obviously, Emma Hayes says she thinks it's done. But do you think there is a chance still for Chelsea?
Yes, I think there is a chance still. They've still got to play Arsenal, who are third and very on Chelsea's heels for second at the minute. So, I mean, that's going to be a really tough task. And I think it's City have won and lost one against Arsenal in the WSL and FA Cup this year. So, you know, it still is all to play for. Chelsea now have to win every game that they've got left this season, which is doable. They've got Bristol City next, so they're going to need to get their goals up as well, because goal difference might play a part on it. But that should be quite an easy task for Chelsea. You know, Bristol City have been relegated this year, so that should be fine. But yeah, I mean, not all hope is lost. I think there's still a long way to go. There's still two games to go, and they're very important games. And the Hayes just needs to keep her team motivated and to go again and try and get this last trophy that she could win with her club.
How much of an effect do you think it's had on them, the loss against Barcelona at the Bridge at the weekend? Obviously, it was some controversial refereeing decisions which Chelsea weren't very happy with. But do you think it's really hurt them moving forwards into their league campaign as well?
Yeah, definitely. It would have played a part, of course. You know, they got so far, they got to the semi-finals of the Champions League, and then they went 1-0 up in the first leg. And so at half-time, they had the advantage. And I think it's probably the hope that kills them more than anything. But I think in terms of the refereeing decisions, I think Barcelona did play better, in my opinion. I mean, they're the best team in the world. They came to the Bridge fighting. You know, they did it over Chelsea last year as well in the same competition, and then went on to win it. So they're winners. They're born winners. They know how to win this competition, and they proved it again at the Bridge, and in front of an away crowd, which is really impressive. Obviously, the penalty might have been soft, and that it probably wasn't a red card, but even so, I think they would have gone on to win it, in my opinion. But that loss is definitely going to have an effect on them, for sure.
And just finally, from a Lioness's point of view, how good was it to see Millie Bright back again starting for the Blues?
Yeah, obviously, great. Great to have her back. It was weird that she was put up front for that Barcelona game, which is a little bit of a strange decision from Hayes, because she's normally a centre-back in defence. But yeah, it didn't quite pull off for the Blues putting up front. But you know, she looked pretty solid there anyway. But in front of for a Lioness's point of view, yeah, I mean, great. We can have that, you know, Leah Williamson and Millie Bright partnership back, which of course won the Euros. So to have Bright and Leah Williamson as well, obviously coming back from injury as well, she's looking more and more solid every week now with Arsenal. So yeah, I mean, it's all go for the Euros again to try and defend that title.
Do you think they will, just quickly?
Good question. I'd like to say yes, because I would love it to happen again. I think it's always more difficult coming in trying to defend your title. I think it puts, again, more pressure on them, and it's whether they're going to be able to withstand that. They've had the news that, you know, Rachel Daly has retired, which is a big blow. She was a bit of a super sub in the Euros campaign when they won it. And I think they've looked a little bit off the mark in recent friendlies and the Euros qualifiers. However, they've got some big, you know, youngsters coming into the squad. Grace Plimpton, Aggie Beaver-Jones, who almost got a hat-trick last night at Chelsea. So I'm going to say yes. I think they can do it again.
Lots of confidence there. Thank you very much, Emily, for joining us.
Thank you, John.
Freelance football journalist Emily Herbert there, speaking WSL, as we get to the crunch time of it.
Emma Hayes' counterpart for Chelsea men, though, Mauricio Pochettino, is getting ready to face his former side Tottenham tonight in the Premier League. He says his side have to be desperate not to let their London rivals come away with points after the game tonight.
It's going to be emotional because when you face your former team and when the history was good, that always you remember. And I think it's 90 minutes that we want to win, and Tottenham for sure is going to come here to try to win also.
Big night in the Premier League then, and also a big night for Aston Villa in the UEFA Conference League. That's what we'll be talking about next.
Now, we mentioned it a minute ago, and Aston Villa will face Olympiacos tonight in their first European semi-final for 42 years.
Unai Emery has won the Europa League three times with Sevilla and is hoping to use his experience to progress to a final with Villa.
I can use my experiences to try to guide in some moment with the players, but it's create again a new way and try to enjoy a new way. And we are wishing, we are willing to focus in 100% because we appreciate a lot Europe.
Villa will be out without their star player Emiliano Martinez, with the World Cup winner suspended for the first leg against the Greek side.
Defender Matty Cash says that his side won't miss their number one though, because they have confidence in their backup, Robin Olsen.
Robin's got more than enough experience to come in, and as he has done in games this season, he's played games this season and done really well, so I'm not the one to tell him that he's ready, he knows he is, so yeah, it'd be good to good to see him. Yeah.
So, I don't know whether you remember, mate, and I don't know how many of our listeners may remember, but the reason that Martinez is actually suspended is because of that heroics at the penalty shootout in the last round.
Well, I don't think it's not the heroics, it's the antics, I think, at the penalty shootout. He had a yellow card in normal time, and then he got a yellow card during the penalties, but of course it resets at the penalty time, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's one of those rules that, well, I didn't know, and I don't think many people on X knew, because, yeah, supposedly that when you get a yellow in normal time and extra time, they are as one, but you can still get you can get another yellow in penalty shootouts, and they kind of reset. However, they did accumulate for a suspension. So during that game against Lille, he was obviously able to carry on and make the decisive contribution in the penalty shootout. But then when it came to it, to the semi-final now, he will now be suspended. How big a miss do you think it'll be for them?
Well, he's been such a staple for them during their season, actually, Villa. I think their players have come out and said that a lot. So them missing him in a big European semi-final, I mean, Robin Olsen is more than up to it. He's played a couple games in the Prem this season as well. But it's a massive miss, the fact that you have a World Cup winner, winning keeper, starting keeper, out for your European semi-final. He's been a staple for them this season.
But you do have to say that Villa will be really confident going into this game. Looking at their Premier League season, they've been sensational. And I think Unai Emery is pretty nailed on for Manager of the Year. Do you agree?
Yes. Yeah, 100%. I can't really think of other people who'd beat him. I mean, Gary O'Neill at Wolves?
Maybe Rob Edwards at Luton if they stay up?
Maybe.
But even so, I don't think anybody expects Villa to be this good this quickly. He's only been there 18 months and he's turned them from... Well, Steven Gerrard had them fighting relegation somehow. I don't even know how he's managed that. Yeah. But now they're pushing for Champions League places, and you have to say that they deserve it. They fully deserve where they are.
I'd say they're almost nailed on for Champions League, actually, because, I mean, Tottenham have Chelsea, Tottenham have Man City as well this season. I think Villa also have...
Villa have definitely got easier games in their running compared to Spurs.
I was about to say they have Man City as well, but they've already played them. No, Villa definitely have easier games. They're 7 points ahead of Tottenham with two games in hand, is it, for Tottenham? And I actually consider them favourites now to beat them.
Yeah, no, you'd definitely say so. And they'd have to take that favourites tag into their European campaign as well. They've got the outstanding player in the tournament, and one of the outstanding players in the Premier League this season, in Ollie Watkins.
Oh, wow.
And I know you know him very well from his Exeter roots.
Oh, yeah. No, so he came up through Exeter, and he was amazing. I remember watching playoff semi-final and final with him. Obviously, being Exeter, we didn't win the final. But the semi-final, he scored a beautiful left-footed goal into the top corner. I remember there was a derby between us and Plymouth, and we were 1-0 down and he scored twice to win 2-1. And the fact that he's gone from Exeter, just me watching him at local club, to being a potential for England at the Euros, it's a bit mental to see. Like,
do you feel like a proud father?
Oh yeah, it was all me.
All that support that you gave him on that one cold, wet night in Exeter 10 years ago.
Yeah. But you have to say that he actually really deserves to be in the England squad, to be fighting for a starting place if they were to, like, start him and Kane together. I doubt it, but he's definitely in one of the teams of the season for League.
Definitely. And you'd have to say, from an England point of view, who would you rather come off the bench than him? He's a bundle of energy and he makes defenders' life hell. And it will be really exciting to see how he plays when he's obviously got the better players around him. No offence to Villa, but when he's got Phil Foden around him, when he's got Cole Palmer around him, when he's got Bellingham around him. It's, as an England fan, it's brilliant to see, isn't it, mate?
He offers a completely different dynamic to Harry Kane. He's a willing runner and he runs in behind quite a lot. Harry Kane will come short and play make. Ollie Watkins will be that number nine up top and will take players on. I mean, people were making an argument maybe for, like, the likes of Ivan Toney or someone like that, for penalties in particular. But Ollie Watkins, the fact that he's up there with the most goals scored this season in the Premier League without scoring any penalties, says it all in terms of his output in the box.
Yeah, no, definitely. From an England point of view, in the last few years, the problem with England's attack is that none of them want to run in behind. The only one that does is Rashford, and for a lot of the last few years, he's been great, but for a lot of it, he's been poor. He's on one of his poor runs at the minute, and it's not even set that he'll get into the squad. So that's what England need from their forwards, and Ollie Watkins is the best player in Europe at the minute, isn't he?
I think some people have touted him and Harry Kane to start up front. What do you think about that?
I think it'd be brave, given the fact he's... How many caps has he got? He's less than five. It's very, very few caps.
Well, he's had a few recently, I know, especially when Harry Kane was injured for the Brazil and the Belgium game. But I don't know... Ollie Watkins didn't start one of those games either. So he's had a few recently.
But it would be a big shove to push him into this situation after he's not had many caps for England in recent years. But it's one of those things we're just going to have to wait and see when the squad's announced, isn't it, mate?
Yeah, it is.
Now, Ryan Garcia has denied taking a performance-enhancing substance despite testing positive for a banned steroid before his win over Devin Haney.
Sanctioning body, the WBC, confirmed it had received notification from the Voluntary Anti-Doping Association, VADA, that Garcia returned adverse findings in tests taken in April.
The samples were allegedly taken the day before and the day of his win over Haney, with the results afterwards showing Garcia's positive result of Osterine.
In a statement by Devin Haney, he said, "It's unfortunate Ryan cheated and disrespected both the fans and the sport of boxing by fighting dirty and breaking positive not once, but twice." He then went on to say, "This puts the fight in a completely different light. Despite the disadvantage, I still got back up. People die in this sport. This isn't a joking matter."
And on to some tennis news now, and world number two Jannik Sinner has withdrawn from the Madrid Open over an injury to his right hip. This hands Thursday's opponent Felix Auger-Aliassime a walkover into the semi-finals. It comes after Carlos Alcaraz's hopes of winning a third successive Madrid Open tennis title were ended by Andrei Rublev, who beat him 2-1 in the quarterfinals. And back to the snooker briefly, where Ronnie O'Sullivan has today cast doubt on whether he will play in the United Kingdom next season after his 13-10 World Championship defeat to Stuart Bingham. The 48-year-old has signed a 3-year ambassadorial agreement with Saudi Arabia, requiring him to play in all snooker tour events in the region, and has previously spoken out about his frustration with the number of modern tournaments and travelling required.
We've now got a heartwarming story for you from the world of golf. English teenager Chris Kim has had to put his GCSE revision on hold to make his PGA Tour golf debut.
The 16-year-old, wow, who's been given a sponsor's invite, joins former world number ones Jordan Spieth and Adam Scott in the field for the CJ Cup Byron Nelson, which begins today in Texas. Jason Day is the defending champion, with Matt Wallace and Robert McIntyre also playing.
Wow, I mean, I don't know what I was doing at 16, but I don't think it was performing professionally on the world tour, was it?
It's the fact that he's having to cancel his, or not cancel, postpone, like, his GCSE revision. I mean, you see it with quite a few footballers, actually. They go back to school and then they have a game in the evening for Barcelona or something like that.
How would you... I don't think... Surely the adrenaline, it must last weeks. How do you sit down in a GCSE exam, like, a few days later or a few weeks later or whatever it is, and concentrate on the test you're trying to do, when you're thinking about all the lights and all the riches that you've realised that are there in the world with your clearly amazing talent in the world of golf?
Also, he must be thinking that that's the future that he wants to pursue, not anything. I mean, it would be a good idea to keep working on your GCSEs, obviously, but he's got a full future ahead of him in golf, like these footballers would do in football, and surely his mind is fully on that and not on the GCSEs.
Well, yeah, you have to give him huge credit, because there are a lot of sports people who, without meaning to, give up on their studies to pursue the sport. But no, full credit to him for doing that, and we'd like to see him go on and conquer the world in terms of golf.
That's about it from us this afternoon. Thank you very much for listening, and remember, you can download the podcast soon after we go off air.
We'll see you at the same time tomorrow. Goodbye.
Goodbye.